Now, the day-long retreat today is called Truly Living in the Present Moment. And I wonder if I wrote this or whether Betsy wrote some of it, and because it's quite wonderful. But so we were going to focus today. What we're focusing on is two inextricably connected capacities of living in the present moment. One, cultivating stillness and stability of mind that is capable of being present in calmness to whatever is manifested in the moment. Hopefully, you've already mastered that one. And secondly, bringing forth the ability with mindfulness, courage, and compassion to ride the waves of emotionality or uncomfortable sensations with greater presence, intelligence, and ease. Right? So, Betsy had great expectations, not only for me, but for all of us today. But I think the words are good, and they certainly point us in the direction of what this is about. And again, I think that's important just to note, because in the last decade or two, there has been such an outpouring of the use of the word mindfulness. Maybe some of you have noticed. That it's really lost its original meaning, which really all the original propagators of mindfulness and this and that all came out of the Buddhist tradition, right? And they took this piece, a very essential piece, important piece, and created a standalone. And that then has continued to enter our society, but often it has lost its really meaning and purpose in the original context of which the Buddha taught it. So again, I think there are all kinds of therapeutic mental health reasons, and you know, in terms of work and all these things, where learning to be present is very beneficial. But that's sort of a more therapeutic or a more instrumental kind of use of it. Again, not denying that it is very helpful and beneficial. But the Buddha, as I say over and over again, he always says, I only teach one thing, the end of suffering. Right? The end of suffering, he said. Not, I teach a slight lessening of suffering. He didn't say that. This is important that we listen to his teaching. He says, I teach the cessation of suffering. I teach the awakening of all the wholesome qualities that are in the mind. Right? I show the path he taught for 40, 50 years. I teach the path that shows the way to this awakening of the mind and all the capabilities. So this is what the Buddha taught. And this was his purpose in teaching. And in the context of that, this present moment, again, which is, you know, on the cover of every magazine and might even, you know, be the slogan of the year. So the Buddha said, so it's called the Bhadakaratha Sutta. So sutra for the, how many people this is their first day long with us? Oh, okay, welcome. How's it going so far? So-so? How's it going? Is everything clear? Not your mind, you know. The transformation of our minds is our responsibility, you know. And oftentimes in the beginning, one of the really downsides of meditating and mindfulness is what? We notice what's really going on in our minds. Is that clear? And oftentimes that is, you know, we're often disappointed. You know, how did we end up with a mind such as this? you know, or we're disturbed, or we're agitated, or we're, you know, all kinds of things. But, you know, if we do it just once or twice, then that can be understandable, and it could really, in a certain way, increase our suffering. You know, like denial is sometimes, you know, a good strategy if we're not ready to deal with things. But if we really want to transform, if we want to really heal, then we want to know what it is that needs to be healed and what it needs to be transformed, right? And if we want a peaceful mind, a calm mind, a stable mind, a wholesome mind, a healthy mind, a happy mind, you know, then we have to begin where we are at, you know, and that is a great disappointment to us, because we would like, many of us, we would like to begin where we'd like to begin. Is that clear? But where we like to begin is a fantasy. What you experience today is the reality today of your mind. Is that clear? And what we want to do is learn to work with our minds as they are, right? And to do that, we need a technology. We need a way. And that's what we're learning today. So this sutra, is that thank you. How's this? Is this better? No, okay. Now it should be better. Is it better now? You're not happy with it, I can tell. I mean, we can take it. It's good enough. That was really wonderful. I mean, that's a good way that we want to be, right? You know. Good enough. Good. So I want to, so this very kind of well-known stanza that I began reading today, and I have actually several translations, comes from this Padakarata Sutta. And let me say something about, for those of you who are interested in reading original sources, let's say in Buddhism, understand, unless you speak the original language, Sanskrit, Pali, you know, Chinese, Tibetan, Vietnamese, we are getting translations. Is that clear? Which means somebody is reading a totally different language than they grew up with, and they're finding words in English that they think convey the meaning. Is that clear? For example, Thich Nhat Hanh, you know what he calls this sutra, translated in English? The one who knows the better way to live alone, right? Another translator calls it the Auspicious Day Sutra, Sutta. And a third translator calls it the Single Excellent Night Sutta. Is that clear? So it is important that we understand that, and again, you know, they're all reading the same word, but they're trying to find meaning and a way to express it in our language. Some people stick very close, and some people are more inventive. You know, again, hopefully, you know, everyone means well, but it's important to know that. So in this sutta, which is the Pali and Sanskrit school sutra, these are the purported words of the Buddha. So there are many, 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 many teachings in Buddhism, but when we hear the word sutra, pretty much in all cases, this is something that was heard by one of the Buddha's followers when he said it, while he was alive, and at they had a meeting, a council after the Buddha's passing of all his close disciples who had been with him years, if not decades, where they all shared these various teachings that they had heard the Buddha said, and they decided certain ones were called sutras, right? They gave it the official stamp, and a couple of centuries later, they were written down. In the early days, they were orally transmitted. And so if you ever read Buddhist sutras and you go, why do they repeat the same thing so often, right? And why are there so many enumerations? You know, there are three of this, or seven of this, or four, you know? That's because it is helpful if you're memorizing, okay? So within this broader sutra, sutta, there is this stanza before the Buddha goes into the explanation. He says to the assembled monks, first, I'm going to give you a summary of what I'm going to be teaching today, okay? So, in the Thich Nhat Hanh translation, it says, do not pursue the past. Do not lose yourself in the future. The past no longer is. The future has yet to come. Looking deeply at life as it is in the very here and now, the practitioner dwells in stability and freedom. We must be diligent today. To wait till tomorrow is too late. Death comes unexpectedly. How can we bargain with it? The sage called a person who dwells in mindfulness night and day, the one who knows the better way to live alone. Quite wonderful. Let me just share with you a couple of others and then we'll dig into it, okay? So another translator says, translate the same words of the Buddha from the Pali. You shouldn't chase after the past or place expectations on the future. What is past is left behind. The future is as yet unreached. Whatever quality is present, you should see right there. Not taken in, unshaken, that's how you develop the heart. Ardently doing what should be done today for, who knows, tomorrow, death. There is no bargaining with mortality and his mighty horde. Whoever lives thus ardently, relentlessly, both day and night, has truly an auspicious day, so says the peaceful sage. Okay? Interesting. I mean, fundamentally the same message, but expresses it differently. And the third one. Let not a person revive the past or on the future build her hopes. For the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight, let him or her see each presently arisen state. Let them know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. Total effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come. Who knows? No bargaining with mortality can keep him and his hordes away. But one who dwells thus ardently, relentlessly, by day and night, it is he or she, the peaceful sage has said, who has had a single excellent night. So, today is about learning to dwell truly in the present moment. And you can see this present moment is not simply a dot in time, right? Because one can live very mindfully in the present moment and yet be up to no good in life. Is that not true? Yeah. So it's very important that we understand that mindfulness by itself is just an attribute of mind that can be used in many ways, for good and bad. So the Buddha presented this living in the present moment in a very specific way, okay? So let us explore together what's going on here. So So the first thing the Buddha says is we shouldn't pursue the past, and we shouldn't pursue the future, we shouldn't chase, we shouldn't ruminate, we shouldn't do any of that. Okay? Now, there are reality-based reasons for doing it, for those of us who want to live in reality. And the reality is what? The past doesn't exist. Right? The past, I mean, the definition of past means it's what? It's past. So we can say anything that has passed no longer exists. It is not our, it is not current reality. Is that true? The future, again, by definition, is not here. It's see, the past is interesting because we can kind of remember, you know, we can see images. It is something that we have lived, right? Even though we know that memory is totally capable of distorting past. But yet there is a consensual sense, yeah, the past has been something, you know, I've lived, right? Or maybe I've lived with other people, right? Now, the future is like totally out there. The future is totally imagined, right? It has not occurred. It's a fantasy. Is that true? And yet, what? And yet, we spend a lot of time ruminating, getting lost in, worrying about, going over the past and the future. Now, again, we will see when we get into what the Buddha said, this doesn't mean, you know, you never do it. But there's a reason the Buddha, in his instructions on living in the present moment, says to us, do not pursue the past, do not pursue the future. He's putting boundaries on us. Because he's going to tell us what is the thing we should be doing. Is that clear? He's setting parameters, right? So stop, you know, and especially in our meditation, stop ruminating about the past. Stop. Stop worrying, anticipating, planning for the future. Stop. Especially in our meditation. We can talk about daily life after. Why? Because in Thich Nhat Hanh translation says, you know, our job is to look deeply in life in the here and now. Somebody else says, we want to be aware of whatever quality is present so we can see it and not be taken in by thoughts about past and future. Okay. That's how you develop the heart. Here he says, be know and be sure of the present, invincible, unshakable. Is that clear? So we're learning not to, you know, endlessly get lost in future and past, so we can do the work which is right here. So we can look deeply into what's going on right now. So we can experience the richness and complexity of life right now. But as long as we believe that endlessly ruminating around in our thoughts, in our memories, in our fantasies is life, we will not have that ability to truly live life where it is occurring and transform, heal, whatever it is we need to do. Is that clear? I mean, this is important. There's a reason, you know, he's not just kind of going, well, you know, it'd be good if you didn't think about the past too much or the future. He's saying, if you really want to lead an auspicious life, if you want to be the one who knows the better way, right, we need to do this. Now, from a mental health point of view, from a non-suffering point of view, it also makes good sense, doesn't it? Because when you, I mean, what when we think about our rumination or going over or thinking about the past, what are we doing in most cases? What? Suffering. I mean, it doesn't mean we can't be thinking she had a really great time last night or when it was good, you know. But a lot of our rumination about the past, the going over about our past, which could be something that happened this morning. What are we ruminating about? What? Happy things? Think about your rumination in the past. What are you going over and over again? Regrets, which make you happy, right? The more you go over your regrets of all the things you should have done or shouldn't have done, it just builds up your joy, right? Okay. What else do we, when we're thinking about the past, what are we thinking about? Blame. Blaming somebody. I can't believe they did this. They shouldn't have done that. You know, endlessly blaming over and over again. And if you could just share a little bit of one sentence, as you ruminate about and blame the person over and over, that makes you happy.
Self-righteous
happy, which is a certain kind of perverted happiness. I agree with you. But if we look at a more, you know, joy, happiness on the schema of positive feelings, we would not say that, you know, you're right. It is very empowering to our sense of self. Yeah, it feels good to be right. But if we step back, we would go, it is a source of suffering. I'm called. You know, what else do we go over when we go over our past? Shame. We think about things that have happened in the past that we have shame, that we have guilt about. Again, just very objectively. And how does that make one feel? Guilt, bad. But bad. I mean, it's an afflictive mind state. I mean, what else do we ruminate about the past? Anything else? We judgments, losses. Right. Now, again, we're talking about rumination. We're talking about over and over and over again. What does that do to our mind? Is it a productive rumination? No. Especially if we objectively say, you know, I would like a peaceful mind. I would like a happy mind. I would like a calm mind. Does going over and ruminating about these past events stabilize and calm the mind? No. This is why the Buddha says, stop it. Again, think about your future thinking. What are you doing when you're thinking about the future? What? Planning. Okay. Planning. Worrying about, you know, we're planning, but we're worried that we may not accomplish all our plans, right? So often there's a lot of worry. Wants, we fantasize things we need and want and must have and need, and right? We're doing a lot of that, you know, desiring things in the future. Right? I mean, that could even be, you know, desiring things just later today or something. You know, but when you're in that state of desiring, wanting, needing, how is your mind? Peaceful? What? No. It's agitated. Worry, stress, anxiety. These are all come from future-based thinking. In the mental health world, you know, often depression is considered primarily a problem that relays and how people, because people who are depressed tend to mull over the past, right? People who are anxious tend to be anxious about the future. I mean, it's an obvious thing. You can't be worried about the past. And yet, none of it is reality-based. Because the past is past. It no longer exists. The future, no matter how much we fantasize, plan, right, worry, it will still unfold the way it'll unfold. Is that true? And when we get there, it'll be known as the present moment. Then our future will be real. Until then, it's just a fantasy, an imaginary process our minds are going through, how things are going to turn out or not turn out. Who's going to say what? How I'm going to be? What's, you know? That's all just going on in our imagination. It's causing our minds to be disturbed. So, from a healthy mental health, a healthy mind point of view, endlessly being lost in the past and endlessly ruminating about and worrying about the future, you know, produces unhappiness in us. But again, as the Buddha said, if the purpose of living in the present moment is not just to live in the present moment, but to look deeply into the present moment, if our energies are always out there, that task of healing and transformation becomes very difficult. Right? Because to transform takes energy, takes focus, takes intention, takes follow through, right? But if our mind lacks those qualities, then even though we may want change and transformation and healing and everything, it will not occur. And many of us are frustrated by our own lack of progress, aren't we? In many ways. But it's really not that we are somehow at fault or there's something wrong with us. It is often the case that we are just not giving what we want the attention it needs because our attention is elsewhere. And where it is in places that are not productive. I mean, how many times do you have to go over, you know, I mean, like, you know, how many times do you have to blame the person? Okay, I mean, let's say, you know, you had your original blame. All right, you want to give yourself two or three times. All right, two or three times, good. I mean, yeah. It's good to give ourselves a little wiggle room. We're not perfect yet, all right? But in truth, we do it how many times, right? I can't believe she did that. But you know what I mean, right? I can't believe that happened, or regret. You know, if you think about the things you have regret for, and you know, none of us are perfect. There may be things in our life recently or in the past that we regret. But once you've understood that whatever happened is regretful, you know, you've learned your lesson. And all the energy should be starting right this moment. This is how I'm going to act in those situations. Right? You know, painful events, events we have shame for. Again, how many times do we go over them in our life? One or two? No. Thousands. For what purpose? I mean, for those of you who do it, tell me what the purpose is. It makes you feel good. It gets rid of that memory or that feeling. No, we're actually increasing it. Why? Because we're continually paying attention to it. Is that clear? That's what we're doing. You know, in the pursuit of happiness, Shanti Deva says something. In the pursuit of happiness, we only cause suffering for ourselves. We want to be happy, right? We want to be free of shame. We want to be free of regret. We want to lead a good life. And yet, we just live in the past, live in the future. Okay. Now, developing this capacity of being mindful of what's arising in the present, and as Thich Nhat Hanh says, looking deeply, there's the freedom, right? Because when regret or shame or blame or all the other things arise, if we are aware that they've arisen, when we can name them, we have the capacity of what? changing. Right? So living in the present moment is not just, you know, I'm aware, you know, that I'm aware that I'm blaming again. I mean, so what? There's no credit for that. You see? Because you could continue. You see, this is the problem with this kind of very singular, mono kind of mindfulness. So what? Right? Because we may continue to blame as a characteristic, you know, even though we're, you know, we can name it. I mean, we'll get down into that in a moment. So the key thing is understanding that if we do want to change, if we do want to transform, it can only occur in the present moment. I recently had somebody in solitary retreat, and people, for those of you a little older, I think wasn't there a program back in the 50s or something, Kids Say the Darndest Things, is that right? What? Art Linkletter. You're dating yourself, Richard. But you know, adults say the darndest things. So this one person who's having who's on retreat, you know, sort of toward the end, you know, had a lot of good insights, says, I really see my habit energy clearly, and I know I got a lot of work ahead of me. It's going to be hard work. I mean, she actually said that. And I said to her, no, it's not. Because change only occurs in the present. Right? It's not like, you know, all your habit energy is lined up. You know what I mean? It's like this, you know, like a railroad train that stretches on forever and it's in a, you know, and it's just moving through you, and then it's, you know, yeah, that would be hard to stop. I totally agree that would be, but that's not a way it occurs. Okay? Because when shame or blame or regret or worry or fear arise in you, they always arise in the present moment. Let me say that again. It's so simple, right? Everything arises in the present moment. It can't arise anywhere else because this is where we're alive, right? So if you're ruminating about the past, you're ruminating about the past when? Now. Feel like I'm in first grade. I mean, and it's so profound, and yet it's so obviously simple, isn't it? I mean, you see, and yet we miss it. So let me just say it again. You can be the biggest shame-based, blame-based, regret-based, worry-based, fear-based, you know, anger-based, whatever person there is. But if you're going through any of those mind states or thoughts, you're having them only in the present now. Is that clear? You can't do it anywhere else. Try thinking in the past. Try thinking in the future. It's a challenge. In the present, you can think about the past. In the present, you can think about what you think the future is be, but it's all occurring when? Now. This is the importance of now, of the present moment, why the Buddha, you know, made such a big deal about it 2,600 years ago. Because he was teaching a path of transformation, of awakening from suffering, and he wanted to make it easy on his disciples. So he gave them this very pith teaching. So, as opposed to this woman who talked about her heavy-duty habit energy and how hard it's going to be to change it again, like it's this, you know, long train, you know. No. your habit energy, whatever it is, will only arise in the present moment. And how will it arise? Think about all your stuff. How does it arise in the present moment? As a what? What? As a thought? As a feeling? As a sensation? As an image? Right? That's how it'll arise right now. As one thing. Is that clear? And if we have developed ourselves in mindfulness, again, this is our problem. We are always looking for short-term solutions in our culture. We're too busy, right? But you know, it sounds great what I'm saying, but without a certain degree of mindfulness, of insight that comes through meditation or whatever, we won't be able to do it, you see. Because there has to be at least some ability and some clarity of mind that when a thought or a feeling or a mind state is arising, we are aware of it. We have some level of self-awareness and introspection. Is that clear? So when shame or guilt or fear is arising, we can be aware and we can even name it. I am aware that shame has arisen in me. I'm aware that anger has arisen in me. I'm aware that worry has arisen in me. I'm aware that sadness has arisen. You know, I'm aware when happiness and joy and compassion, forgive me for not, you know, I mean, that's the real emphasis, but, it's this suffering stuff that gets in the way. Now, in the Buddha Sutra, I guess I won't read it for time's sake. But let me just say, the Buddha, I like what Thich Nhat Hanh does. Basically, in this one translation, he talks about not being taken in. That's his phrase. So when these things arise, thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, even thoughts about the present, the practitioner is not taken in. In Thich Nhat Hanh's translation, he gives a little more depth. So when he talks about, for example, and this is now going back again, he's translating the sutra and sutta and the Buddha's words. So after this verse, and I'll read through the whole verse again, the Buddha addressed his monks and said, "What do we mean by pursuing the past?" And he says, "When someone considers the way her body was in the past, the way her feelings were in the past, the way her perceptions were in the past, the way her mental formations were in the past, the way her consciousness was in the past, when she considers these things and her mind is burdened and attached to these things which belong to the past, then the person is pursuing the past." Is that clear? Right? So the Buddha isn't saying, never let a thought from the past arise, right? That's impossible, okay? But he's saying when they arise, right, if you allow your mind to be attached or burdened, that's what it means by pursuing the path. You see, there's an active quality. This is very important to understand. For those of you who've been practicing for decades and those of you who are here the first time, did you notice that thoughts come on their own fairly nonstop? Did you notice that? Right? So everybody who can think that they have some kind of unique mind realize we all have the same thing, okay? Right? Everybody agree? Thoughts come and go. Okay? Do Do you choose all the thoughts that come and go? No. Your mind, and that's another whole, you know, how the mind operates. We won't get into that today. But, yeah, thoughts come and go, right? Good thoughts, bad thoughts, happy thoughts, sad thoughts, thoughts of the future, thoughts of the past, right? They're just arising and passing. What the Buddha says is, but you're pursuing the past when you get attached, you grab on, you embroider, and you become burdened. Now you're carrying that. Right? So when you're having a thought of, what was yours? Regret, that's just a thought arising. But when you attach to it, and you hold on to it, and you know, bring up a lot of other stuff, then you become burdened. You know, a burden means what? Heavy, weighed down. And that's our experience for many of us, you know. Stress, anxiety, sadness, fear, you know, anger. These states weigh us down. Shame, guilt, you know, blame. We get heavy. When we're heavy, when we're burdened, we're not light. When we're not light, we're not happy. Right? Anybody ever been happy? Everybody in here been happy? How do you feel? Heavy or light? Light. You see, you don't have to work on it. You feel light. I mean, when you're involved with acts of kindness and goodness and service and all that good stuff, compassion, and how do you feel? Light. Right? Okay. Lightness. Okay. We're not burdened. So this is very important. So the Buddha, that's what he says for each one of these. Okay? So because what he does is, like he says, see, like over here, he says, what is meant by not pursuing the past? And then he says the same thing he just said. When a person considers the way her body was in the past, the way her feelings were in the past, the way her perception, blah, 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 where her conscience was in the past, when she considers these things, but her mind is neither enslaved by nor attached to these things which belong to the past, then this person is not pursuing the past. Is that clear? This is very important because people kind of overthink this and think, oh, the Buddha teaches, oh, never think about the past. No, sometimes we can think about the past, right? For a moment or two, if it's meaningful. But he's talking about it in a way. And then he goes the same thing for the future. What does it mean by not losing oneself in the future? And then the Buddha says, and I'm just skipping I'm just going to the second part. When someone considers the way his body will be in the future, the way his feelings will be in the future, the way his perceptions will be in the future, the way his mental formations will be in the future, the way his consciousness will be in the future, when he considers these things, but his mind is not burdened by or daydreaming about these things which belong to the future, then he is not losing himself in the future. Is that clear? I mean, it's a very important distinction. You know, it's not as if we're corralling our mind. You know, you're never going to have a future thought. You're never going to have a past thought. No, it's giving some wiggle room. It's like we gave Richard, you know, three blames. We don't want to tie him too tight. But there's got to be acknowledgement. Once we cross that line, we are wandering into not only what is no longer helpful, but is actually causing us suffering. Any questions about this before we talk a little more about the present moment and what to do? Yes. Oh, just for the recording, and people with the hearing devices. Reviewing the past.
Right. Mm-hmm. From the joy lens, mm-hmm. If one does that over and over again, is one equally burdened?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, we want to learn to be happy in the present moment, in life. Right? because this is where life is happening. Right. So, I mean, if we have a happy experience, well, I don't know, what you're with some people, you had a good time. Okay? You know, if you have to continually relive it in your mind over and over again to produce happiness in yourself, or if you have to tell everybody you know for the next 2 months about this happiness, I'd say that's a little overboard. And it's robbing you of, you know, I mean, again, yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong. Like if you had a nice time yesterday or this weekend, if it comes into your mind and think, yeah, that was really fun to be with them and I really enjoyed it, that's fine. That's normal. This is important to see, you know, when, it's like anything else, right? I mean, take grief, right? Is grief normal? Yes. Does grief have a lot of similarity with depression? Yes. But when somebody has those symptoms, when they're grieving, we say that's what? Normal. Right? But when we're having those, when we're having them all by themselves, then we'd say that's passing. That's not normal anymore. We call then the same symptoms depression. Okay? So again, I think we want to create our life in the present. Right? If we want happiness in our life, we want to not have to keep mining the past. We want to be able to create happiness in the present for ourselves by doing things, thinking things, and talking in a way that creates positive feelings for ourselves. I mean, is that clear? It's not going to, how else is it going to come? Now, somebody might say, well, I got a lot going on in my life these days, right? Is that true? How could I possibly be happy? Well, what could we do? Could we notice the sun is still shining? The sky is still blue? That the flowers are beautiful? I mean, is that not real too? Right? We always, Thich Nhat Hanh, he said, we always have the capacity of being happy in the present moment. I mean, that's the North Star here, right? Can I learn that I can generate happiness, well-being within myself, no matter what's going on around me? Which doesn't deny that, all kinds of things could be going on, right? Is that clear? There is a lot of pain and suffering in this life, disappointment. I mean, that's just life, isn't there? But our challenge is, how can I remain stable, calm, clear, with a state of well-being no matter what's going on? Because I can generate that within myself. But if we're not careful, our mind, because of our lack of training, past and future, we can go to it and we can get stuck there, right? That's the problem. We get stuck there. Now, obviously, getting stuck in unhappy memories of the past is more painful than getting stuck on happy memories of the past. But again, if you ask me, ideally, yeah. We want to learn to kind of just live life, create a good life for ourselves in the present. If we're having to always go to the past to create some sort of happiness or joy for myself or meaning, then one would have to acknowledge what? Something's off in my life, isn't it? Yeah. Something's off in my life. And luckily, all these teachings are and methodologies are ways for us to learn that we can generate happiness and well-being in the present moment, no matter what's going on. Is that true? We know that's true. We know there are accounts of people in concentration camps and death camps. What could be more miserable? that were able to generate love and compassion for the people around them. And therefore, what? They didn't suffer so much like everybody else. I mean, and those are, you know, most extreme situations. Is that clear? You know, what the practice does, it empowers us that we are not the slaves of our past conditioning, and we're not the slaves of what's going on around us. Any other questions about what's been said so far? I mean, is everything clear? I mean, not clear, you know what I mean? But it makes sense to you. At least intellectually, you understand what's being taught. Yeah, hold on. They want to. It's the mic.
Happiness as a practice.
Happiness as a practice.
Yes, yes. In other words, so yeah. Cultivating the seed of happiness so that the response of happiness is happening more often.
Yes. That's what this practice is about. In Buddhism, we talk about, and you know very well from Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, that all of us have seeds. There's one way to look at your mind is to see. We have all these seeds. Seeds means seeds that have the potential for experience within us. And our job is to understand that and to realize that we can be conscious cultivators, right? So what we've been talking about for a lot of this morning is how unconsciously we cultivate what in Buddhism are called unwholesome seeds, seeds that produce suffering. You know, so when we are ruminating, when we are going over, when we are reliving, when we're reimagining, we are just, what, cultivating seeds of suffering within us. And when you cultivate a seed, a good seed or a bad seed, you know what happens? It grows. See, it grows. It doesn't care. Right? Anybody here garden? You know that if you water, right? And you make sure there's enough sunshine, and you throw some fertilizer out there, what? The plants you wanted to grow, but also what? The weeds grow, right? Weeds are just as happy to get water and sunshine as the plants we want, right? Okay? So when we are attentive and watering unwholesome seeds, they grow and we suffer. Now, what Buddhism is about is learning not to cultivate those and to cultivate the seeds that create happiness, well-being, joy, peace in our minds and ultimately in the world. Yeah, so there's all kinds of positive seeds within us, and there are all kinds of experiences in life that nourish those seeds. It's not like, you know, it's all on me. No, I mean, you know, taking a walk, noticing the flowers, noticing the sky should make us feel good when we're present to it. You know, I mean, we can think in a way, if we think it's so wonderful to be here today in a room full of people, most of whom I don't know, who are all in one way or another are seeking, you know, happiness, or thinking the end of suffering, or thinking transformation, or thinking healing. I mean, that feels good, doesn't it, to think that way? Yeah, that's the way we want to begin to think more and more. But the problem is our mind is untrained. Well, it's not really untrained. It's trained in affliction. That's the truth. The Buddha called that ignorance, right? We are well trained in how to cause suffering for ourselves and others. Is that clear? See, we don't have to work at that, do we? Notice how easy it is. I mean, it's really bizarre. I mean, it is so easy to cause ourselves and others suffering. Right? We don't have to give it a thought. Just it feels so natural. Right? Is that true? Why does it feel so natural? Because we've just done it. Okay. Now, mindfulness, self-awareness, the teachings and practices now allow us to be aware of what's going on. Buddhism, we call this cause and effect relationship, right? Oh, cultivate unwholesome seeds, get unwholesome results. Wholesome seeds, get wholesome results. It seems so obvious, doesn't it? And yet, we don't live with that awareness, unfortunately. Is that clear? Yeah. Yeah, so thank you. Again, you know, that's very important. Yeah, again, mindfulness, you know, works in all directions. It is a tool. And in Buddhism, it's an essential tool for this path of transformation, that we learn to end our suffering and learn how to create wellness and goodness and wholesomeness within ourselves, our relationships. Any other questions before we talk a little more about what to do in the present moment? The Thich Nhat Hanh translation, the present is approached by saying, looking deeply at life as it is in the very here and now, the practitioner dwells in stability and freedom. So the translations say, whatever quality is present, you clearly see right there. You just see what's going on. You're taken in. You're unshaken. That's how you develop the heart. And the third person says, with insight, we see each presently arisen state and know and be sure of it, invincible, unshakable. Okay. So, and in the commentary by Buddha on his own verse, he says, interesting, it's different than the others. The others are clearly don't follow this, don't pursue this, don't follow this, don't pursue this, right? Don't be attached, don't be burdened. When it comes to the present, the Buddha says something different. And now thinking about it, I think it just affirms what we were just talking about earlier. That if we learn to use our minds correctly in terms of past thoughts and future thoughts, and really create a base for our life of presence and mindfulness, it is here that we practice the path of transformation. Okay? So the Buddha says here, what is meant by not being swept away by the present? And he says, when someone studies and learns about the awakened one, the Buddha, the teachings of love and understanding, the community that lives in harmony and awareness, when that person knows about noble teachers and their teachings, practices these teachings, and does not think, this body is myself, I am this body. These feelings are myself, I am these feelings. This perception is myself, I am this perception. This mental formation is myself, I am this mental formation. This consciousness is myself, I am this consciousness. Then that person is not being swept away by the present. So there's a lot more packed into this paragraph than the others. Is that clear? The others were more about don't do, don't pursue, don't follow, don't embroider, don't get caught in, don't attach. But here the Buddha is now saying, that, but in the present, this is where you have to bring things that you have learned to transform this moment, right? And this is very important. Current mindfulness, kind of, what I guess they call it secular mindfulness, does not really teach. But in the traditional Buddhist teaching about sati and smriti, mindfulness is mindfulness with criteria and awareness of criteria. This is what you're mindful of. I often say to people, you know, this other kind of mindfulness would mean, you know, you're driving down the road and you see a sign, bridge washed out, don't proceed, and you're very mindful and you see that sign and you keep proceeding very mindfully down the road, and then you see that the edge of the cliff is coming and you're very mindful and present. I'm very aware that I am noting that I see the, you know, there's a cliff ahead of me and the bridge is washed out. And then as you go over the cliff, you're very mindful and aware. I am noticing that I am now going down and falling into the... Right? So that person would get an A+ for their mindfulness. Is that clear? But there's no criteria. There's no awareness of what's healthy or not healthy, of what's really going on. So traditionally in Buddhism, mindfulness involves an awareness, it's bigger than just being present. Right? Again, at its most extreme, you know, a murderer could benefit from mindfulness, couldn't they? Right? A thief could benefit from mindfulness, couldn't they? Right? Learning how to be more present, less distracted, really focused on what I'm doing. Right? It could really enhance, you know, my capacities. What's wrong with that? I mean, there's no ethics, there's no bigger picture, there's no, right? There's no sense of harm that my actions are doing. So what the Buddha is now sharing with us is that when we are mindful of what's arising in the present, we are now doing it in the context that we are aware of, and we're practicing a path of transformation. I mean, when he talks about, we've studied and learned about the Buddha and teachings on love and understanding, we're part of the community of love and harmony and awareness, we know about noble teachers and their teachings, and we practice these teachings. Oh, see, that's what we're mindful of when we approach this present moment. We have some context. How about that for another word? There's a context in which our life is unfolding that, it's like Richard was just saying, you know, that we are aware of wholesome and unwholesome, right? If we're just aware without any criteria for wholesome and unwholesome, we can just be, you know, again, we could be aware that our mind is just full of unwholesome thoughts. If there's no criteria about what unwholesome and wholesome is, and no criteria about how to go about healing and transforming and seeds and all that, it's not going to be very beneficial to us. And when he says that, having done all that, the person does not think. And now we're getting a little deeper into Dharma and practice. This body is myself. The person does not think this. This body is myself. I am this body. These feelings are myself. I am these feelings. Perception is myself. I am this perception. This mental formation is myself. I am this mental formation. This consciousness is myself. I am this consciousness. Then the person is not swept away by the present. Now, what he is referring to is in what Buddhism is called the five skandhas, or five heaps or aggregates. It's really saying all the parts of what a human being is, body and mind, okay? So the body is obviously our physical form, and feelings and perceptions and mental formations and consciousness is all the four different aspects of our mind. And he's saying, the person does not think that these are me. Not the ones not aware of them, Not that one is not mindful of our body, of our thoughts, of our feelings, of our sensations, of our mental formations, of our conscious awareness, but does not identify, this is me. This is taking your mindfulness practice one step deeper. Why do we suffer? Why do we suffer? Because we think our body is me. This is who I am. I'm my body. On my thoughts, on my feelings, on my perceptions, on my past, on my mental formations, on my history, on my narrative. This is who I am. But this is not who we are. How can I say that? Because we can be aware of all those things. Your true self is that which is aware of all these things. That's who you really are. I mean, most people would say, well, I am my body, right? Isn't that the way we talk? See, I'm my body. Who am I? Well, I'm my body, first of all. But to say that I am my body would mean that I made my body. Did anybody here make their body? No. Is anybody here in control of their body? You know, sickness, old age, and death, I don't really want to go there. I think I'll just stop my body from doing that. I mean, can anybody do that? No. You know, I mean, are we in control of our body? No. Our body has a life of its own. It's complex. It's incredible. We don't have a clue, do we? And yet we say, I am my body. And yet we have no. The same way we'd say, well, people might think, you know, I'm my thoughts. So let's say a thought of regret pops up in your mind. Did you will it? Did you kind of look through the file of your mind and go, regret, come up? You didn't. Really? How about the blame? You just kind of, you know, you go through your whole file of possible reactions and you go, I choose blame right now. Is that how it operates? Your practice is what, blame? Well, if that's the case. Well, you're doing a very good job, I think. Yeah, or shame, right? It's just what? It comes up. That should show you it's not you. It's something that we're conditioned to and arises by itself. Is that clear? This is our condition. We cannot control that arising at all. So don't be upset with yourself if all kinds of thoughts, feelings come up that are unwholesome. Why do they come up? Because why? Because we have the seeds. Because we have thought it before, we felt it before, we thought, you know what I mean? It'll come up. Don't be disturbed by that. Is that clear? But our freedom is what Buddha's teaching here. And again, this is what we talked about earlier about, you know, our habit energy is not this endless solid freight train. It arises as a single car, a single thought, a single feeling, a single reaction, a single image, you know, that's how it actually occurs. And if we are aware in that moment, when it has arisen, that's why, you know, in insight meditation, you know, the statement is, I am aware that anger has arisen in me. I'm aware that worry is present in me. I'm aware that shame is present. I'm aware. To say you're aware means it's not you, because you're aware of it. Is that clear? How can it be you? Because you're aware of it. But if you don't have awareness, you're lost, right? That, because when it arises, we just what? When the blame or the shame or the fear or the worry or the, you know, et cetera, arises, if we're not aware, if we're not present in the present moment with awareness, we get what? Swept away. Right? Through no fault of your own. You don't have to do anything, right? We said that earlier. You don't have to do anything. Is that clear? You know, we can cultivate delusion and affliction morning, noon, and night without any effort at all. Is that true? Yeah. It seems so natural. It's so easy. But if we kind of get some awareness and go, well, this is suffering. Just causing suffering to myself, to others. I don't want to do this anymore. Well, then we need what? We need this kind of moment awareness that we can be aware of what's rising. We have criteria, unwholesome, unwanted, not necessary, painful. And we can choose in that moment, once we've developed some stability, to do something different. Change, replace, let go of, you know, lots of possibilities. We must be diligent today. To wait till tomorrow is too late. I mean, you know, we could go on and on, right? I mean, what, right, there it is, right? There, I mean, I've been at this for over an hour. You know, I would imagine most people here would, you know, more or less agree with me, right? Sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I'll put this on my list. You know, but, you know, right after today, I got to Home Depot, then I'm meeting these people for dinner tonight, you know, tomorrow, you know, right? That's the way we are. The Buddha says, we must be diligent today to wait till tomorrow is too late. Death comes unexpectedly. How can we bargain with it? In Buddhism, we call this impermanence. Death is just like big impermanence for human beings. It's like the big impermanence. Okay? But impermanence means things are just changing all the time. Nothing has any stability. Everything is unfolding according to causes and conditions. And one of the things about, you know, about taking birth and having a human body is that it will eventually, sooner or later, get sick, get old, and die. Is that true? Yeah, that's the trajectory we're all on. I don't mean to bring you down, but that's the trajectory we're all on. I mean, some of us are a little closer to that. Some of us may think we're further away, but even that's not true. Right? I just heard the other day somebody in their late 20s died. Somebody in their, you know what I mean? You hear all, I'm sure you all know this, right? I mean, so what they're saying is we cannot wait to begin tomorrow because we do not know how our life's going to unfold, do we? No. And we know essentially these days, because there's so much going on, the busyness, the activity, the, you know, so many, that it's just so easy to put the essential things on the back burner. And to put all our energy into things, whether they in the short run are things to do or meaningful, in the long run do not give us the peace and the freedom and the happiness that maybe we seek. So the Buddha says, we must be diligent today to wait till tomorrow is too late. We need, somebody else says, we need to be ardent, for who knows about tomorrow. There's no bargaining with mortality. And mortality includes sickness, you know, the whole deal. We don't, you know, when it comes, it comes. And we all know, if not in our own life, we've dealt with things that have happened in terms of sickness, disease, accidents that's happened in our life that we were not planning on. Is that true? Yeah. I mean, and that's just, you know, so many things in this life are unexpected, especially these days. Work, I mean, so much instability in this work, the world, climate. I mean, there's just more and more and more and more instability, more and more and more unknown trajectories. And yet we think this will go on forever. So the Buddha reminds us about impermanence. We can't wait. Now's the time. Yeah, so we have a few minutes. Questions about how to practice this. So this is not just a Buddhist sermon. For those of you who stand in here today, this is not a Buddhist sermon. These are profound teachings of the Buddha and the masters that were given. They didn't work on commission. They did this out of their great compassion for us, knowing that we don't know the way to end our own suffering. We don't know the way to happiness. They gave these teachings. Unfortunately, there were people in the assembly who, you know, memorized them and eventually wrote them down, and people passed them on for, 2,600 years. We were very fortunate. But any question, this is important. Anybody kind of have doubt about these teachings or doubt about their ability to practice them? Or yes.
The something that I've given, it would maybe exception to, or mm-hmm. that I struggle with, mm-hmm. is the environmental degradation that's going on. And
you give it exception, meaning what?
Given the all the other things that we've spoken about, I know in my own way accept them. I can work with them in my mind. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have clean air and clean water, mm-hmm. none of this even matters. And mm-hmm. so, mm-hmm. to me, what seems like something being overturned every day, mm-hmm. or just the degradation, that is something I still really struggle with. And I'm not really sure how to, and I struggle.
So again, this is not about that. This is about you. Yeah. What you want to do with your life, how you want to respond to the suffering of the world, that's your business. That's good. Okay? But even if you decide, let's say, environmental degradation is a thing, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So let's just say it's a top priority. It nullifies any other thing I could possibly do. So therefore, you're going to go do what?
Do what I can do.
All right, do what you do. And you know what? As you're doing what you're going to do, you're going to be thinking and feeling. You're going to be alive in the present moment. Whatever you do, you're going to be doing in the present moment now. Mm-hmm. How do you want your mind to be as you're trying to turn around human beings and what they're doing? How do you want your mind to be?
Happy.
Yeah. Peaceful, compassionate. Mm-hmm. So this is the practice for you. Is that clear? You know, it gives us the tools to enter the world of suffering and impermanence, you know, and bring something positive to it. You know, it's like Thich Nhat Hanh said, you know, you want a peaceful world, peace begins with me. I mean, so simple.
So I don't mean to be stupid about this.
No, this is not
easy. So just do anything that I can do and don't worry that, you know.
Don't worry about what?
I mean, sure, the earth will still be here. We may not. I mean, mm-hmm. we're all dying, but I'm just.
Well, that is true.
Don't worry about the future. Just do what I can do now. And
Again, the Buddha, he didn't say, don't worry, be happy.
Yeah.
You know, please don't reduce the Buddha's teachings to something trite. Okay?
Yeah.
He says, see the trajectory and worry yeah, this is not a good trajectory. You know, there's all kinds of danger for lots of people and animals and plants. Okay, I get it. But don't keep worrying. Right? Like okay. He says, you know, you can have a little worry, but then put your energy into doing something that's wholesome, that's helpful. Because if you continually get yourself in a state of fear or anger or, you know, despair, which people do, you know, are you helping the planet?
No.
No. Right? Yeah. Are you making yourself a better vehicle for transforming the planet and working to help it? No.
No, but I do see people who are using that anger to help motivate others and rally other things, you know, other people to do things.
I completely understand. You know, in our world, on all sides these days, anger and hatred is dominant. You know, we have another way. It's the way of love. It's a way of understanding. It's a way of compassion. It also is a very powerful energy, very motivating energy. Yeah, I mean, you know, Buddha said, anger will never cease by anger. Violence will never seek by violence. Violence will only seek by nonviolence. Anger will only seek by love. You know? Yeah, you know, I mean, cause and effect. I mean, look at our world right now. Both sides, or I don't know, maybe there are more than one side, more than two sides. Everybody's angry. You know, where's it going to lead? You know, where is it leading right before our eyes? Is it making the situation better? No, it's just anger, 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 more hatred, anger. Anger is a very dangerous emotion. Yeah. Yeah, so one can, you know, want to change the world because one loves the world. It's a different emotion. It may, you know, you could be doing the same thing. Yeah, but unfortunately in these days, anger is an energy, right? And it can be energizing. But as Richard wisely point out, behind a lot of anger is self-righteousness. I am right, and if I'm right, you're wrong. And that's what's going on all sides. So, you know, anger historically can be very motivating. You know, gets you out of all kinds of terrible situations you get angry at, right? Whether you're a person, but it's, you know, short term. But to dwell in anger is not good. Is that clear?
It is. I guess that's the exception, is that I feel like I am right that we shouldn't hurt the environment. And so
yeah, you're,
I understand.
You are totally right. I mean, you're totally right, you know, but I'll go further than you. We shouldn't hurt anybody.
Yes.
We shouldn't hurt people. We shouldn't hurt animals. We shouldn't hurt plants. You know, we shouldn't hurt anybody. Okay? So I'm even taking it more than you. Okay? We're in total agreement. Okay. Now what? Do I hate everybody who doesn't agree with me? That's not the way. Because they'll do the same thing. You know, they think they're as right as you are. That's the problem. You know, we're all caught up in this attachment to ideas and ideology and self. Yeah, it's interesting times, doesn't even touch it. So, having said all this, we will end the Dharma talk.